Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
It's time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Dave Tree.
That's not true. That's impossible.
Welcome to episode 2 of Making Tracks. Brought to you by the team at Fantatracks. I'm joined on our second episode by, well, somebody you've heard before. This is only our second episode, so it's pretty hard not to have heard of this person before. Dave, welcome back to the show.
Uncle Buck is back.
Yeah, Uncle Buck in the house.
That's twice everybody's let you down.
I know.
You know, either that or I sabotaged every single one of them.
It could be that.
You know, to make sure that, like, gets back to me.
I'm just glad I've got somebody I can rely on.
You can't rely on me.
I'm making the best of a bad thing here, aren't I?
Pretty much. Well, like I said, the only way is up if you can get through this.
This is true.
So, it's great to be back. And what a great first episode that was. I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. I actually had some listener feedback.
Really?
Yeah. Have I got time to give you that?
Tell us, because I never get feedback. I just get criticism. So, well, I guess that's feedback of a sort.
There's two bits of feedback, in effect. One of them was from Stephen Danley. He of the Kive cast and Star Wars at the Movies.
Yeah.
Steve was very kind in saying that it was great to have you back on the air and to hear your lovely dulcet tones, and I was all right.
Oh, is that what he said?
Yeah, so I was just about okay. So
I think he got us mixed up. I think he must have meant you, Dave.
No, I think he didn't mix it up at all. Thank you, Steve. Yeah, I cried myself to sleep that night. It's okay. But I also got a message from a chap called Matt Bell. So I'm going to read this out because it's quite a lengthy message.
You're very prepared. I've not prepared a thing for this show. This is very good.
At least one of us is a pro.
Never let it be said that you're not a pro, Dave.
So this is from Matt Bell. Hi, Dave. I hope you don't mind me messaging you out of the blue like this. But the reason I'm messaging you today is just to tell you how much your story on Fantatracks Radio resonated with me. I couldn't agree more about the 90s resurgence nostalgia being even stronger than my original 80s nostalgia. Your story could have been about me. I made a scrapbook of 90s newspaper magazines and Argos catalogue clippings. I remember going into the local newsagents as a teenager and asking them if I could get the Dark Horse comics in, which of course they couldn't. And how excited I was when I found an import comic shop in Meadow Hall, Sheffield, called The Last Picture Show.
Ah, yes.
Which is sadly no longer there. That had Dark Empire in. I remember going to toy fairs before they were called cons and getting the vintage Kenner figures I didn't have as a child. I remember talking my dad into driving to Multicon at Hull Town Hall to meet Peter Mayhew. I remember getting the early Star Wars LucasArts games such as X-Wing, Rebel Assault, Dark Forces. I remember getting the West End Games books just as reference books and not for the game, as none of my friends were into playing. That's the same with me. that and it was too complicated as well. You know, trying to read it yourself is like,
oh yeah.
I remember buying the re-release of the VHS that had the very first leaflet for the Power of the Force 2 figures in it and seeing them on the pegs in Woolworths for the first time.
Oh, Woolworths.
I used to get a magazine called Area 51. Oh yes, that was a classic. To find out about the upcoming figure releases. And I remember getting the entire run of UK Star Wars weeklies from a classified ad in SFX for £60. I'm sure so many of us have similar memories of this time, but for me, they're truly some of my best Star Wars memories. Anyway, sorry for rambling on. It's just your story really resonated with me. Cheers, Matt. That's really cool.
That's really cool. It's a little time machine, isn't it? When you start thinking back, all the cool stuff.
Oh, God. Definitely. But no, that sort of stuff I absolutely love. And in fact, as we record today, I've been up in the loft, sorting out the loft and then leaving it to come and record. But like, I've literally like been going through boxes of stuff that's like, oh, wow. And like finding things that you kind of forgotten about, but then finding a load of awesome bits and pieces that you knew were lying around somewhere. Yeah. But I've managed to dig out the Micro Machine transforming Darth Vader head playset.
Whereas, ooh, like, nice.
Cloud City, and the Boba Fett one, which is also clouds. And those things have awesome products. So last episode, we were fortunate enough to play the first half of our interview with Gareth Edwards, which me and Paul, Claire and Carl did in Nuneaton-on-Sea, the English Riviera, back in December. You live near the real English Riviera, though, don't you? Not that far away. We have palm trees in Nuneaton. They fly
them in.
You can't
beat that. You can't beat that.
So pineapples and everything. We have fresh milk up here. It's wonderful. So we sat down. We were very lucky. Gareth knew the building. So he said, there's a place upstairs. So we all went upstairs. So last week we played, or the last episode rather, we played the first 15 minutes from our chat. And now here is the remaining 15 minutes of me, Paul, Carl and Claire sitting down with the director of the awesome Rogue One, Gareth Edwards.
So when did the weight of responsibility really like hit on your shoulders? Was it when you were on set, actually, camera in hand? Or was it before then, like you say, just breaking the story? Because it's pretty hefty as a fan. I mean, obviously, the ink and the blue milk at TV and all that stuff, so you've been there and done it as a fan.
Yeah, it's a really hard thing to explain. It sounds like a load of nonsense, but... Okay, so there's... You don't get to have, like... Or maybe you do... Right, but it feels like you don't get to have multiple lives, right? You just get one.
Yeah.
And so you get into this train of thought, which is, okay, so what do you prefer? Do you prefer the version where you don't do this?
Yeah.
Right? And you just have a normal life and whatever happens, happens? Or do you want the version where you make Star Wars? It's like, I want the Star Wars version.
Oh, yes.
And so I'm happier with that and everything that comes with it than it not having it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you sort of feel lucky and like... In your mind, because you're obviously a little bit deluded, you're like, I know how to do this. You know what I mean? Like, this is my specialist subject. Like, I feel like born, or I grew up to spend the rest of my adulthood involved in Star Wars because it's what I love.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing intimidating about Star Wars.
No.
The intimidation becomes... and I'd gone through it on Godzilla where you get, like... You make a film, you have to forget that lots of people might see it, and then suddenly lots of people will see it, and then there's obviously opinions, and you hear them all. That's why the beauty of the internet. And so I ended up being... I was very familiar with that, the aftermath of making a film and the reactions you can get, and they're not all good, you know. But you can't think about that.
Do you have to be selfish in a sense and go, I'm making... Like Georgia said that, I'm making these for me. Did you have to go in thinking, I'm making... I know you're working with a corporation, there's other elements, but are you going in thinking, I'm making this for me?
Yeah, that's what you tell yourself. Because I don't... If you second you make... The second you make a decision, and obviously these lots of decisions happen that you don't fully, you know, necessarily control, but the second you make a decision on that, where you go, I don't like this, but I think someone exists that does like this... It's going to be rubbish. Do you know what I mean? So you have to do things where you go, I really want to see that. I really like that idea. And then sometimes you pitch them to people, you try and explain them to people, and I go, I don't get it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
And you start, and it's hard then to differentiate between, do they just not see it how I see it? And I've got to really like keep hold of this and push it through. Or are they trying to tell me something and I'm...
Yeah.
And
You're not seeing it.
Yeah. And so that's probably the biggest thing you battle in as you make a film is... confidence versus like not being able to see the woods for the trees.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, some people probably land permanently in the camp of like, what I'm going to do is amazing and it's going to look amazing and it's all going to be great. And that works for some people and they get their vision through and sometimes it's great, sometimes it isn't. Then other people like are like very open and organic.
Yeah.
And find it. And I grew up thinking I was going to be the guy who storyboarded every shot.
Did the Spielberg thing.
And then I became, after doing the Monsters film, I got really excited about having a plan, yeah, letting that plan completely go away during the process, because then it can be,
yeah,
hopefully you find something you're not thinking of that's even better than what you planned.
Do you like to be surprised when you look at the rushes and or whatever, however you do it, you know, look back and go, I didn't know that actor was going to give that look, that gives me another idea. Do you enjoy seeing those moments, or that sparks an idea?
You sort of like, it's like a football match, like filming in soccer match, you know, in that you, it's like a penalty shootout constantly.
I
like this. The nerves.
I thought you were going to say game of two. Obviously.
No, but it is. It's like you. It's this. You know when like England make it to the playoffs just before the quarter final, yeah. And they inevitably end up in a penalty shootout.
Yeah.
And then it goes into like even. It becomes even. Then it's into like sudden death.
Yeah.
And golden goal or whatever. Yeah. And it's horrific, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, it is horrific.
So who is the Gareth Southgate of Rogue One?
don't put your hand up, Gareth.
No one wants to be Gareth Southgate.
Exactly.
Like, maybe a Stuart Pearce. Yeah. You know, like, redeem himself in some way at some point.
Yeah, it took 6 years, but it worked out. So do you ever, you say you can't watch that film now at the moment, because you're still too close to it. It's only, it's last year, isn't it? Do you think you'll ever envisage a time when you'll sit down on Sunday afternoon, flick the telly on Channel 5 and Rogue One comes on, and you'll just happily watch it without any filter and just enjoy it as a film?
The biggest dilemma I think I probably have is that if I ever have kids, I haven't got any kids, but if I ever had a kid, whether it be a boy or a girl, a really important moment for me as a parent is going to be the first time they watch Star Wars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now,
there's a question.
Well, now the weird thing is like,
what order you
which would you show?
Well, there's no way I know if I'd show them Rogue One first. I'd always show A New Hope, okay, right? Yeah. I'd definitely go A New Hope, Empire.
You're going to raise
Jedi.
Your kids learning to watch prequels after they've watched it.
Yeah. I mean, because I couldn't feel stronger about it, and that's the order I watched it in. Yeah. So like they've got to watch it in that order.
Yeah.
And then I'd probably do it in chronological, and they say, okay, and then what happened is George Lucas came back and it was a long period of time and digital technology had happened, and then they made these and show the prequels.
Yeah.
And then I go, and then what happened? Disney came along. And then at some point, I'm sure they would know, right? There's no way they're not going to know that you made one.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's the bit where I wouldn't want to hear what they thought, because I think it'd break your heart if they were like, I didn't like that one, Dad, it's boring.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I have the same. I'm in bands, and my daughter's like, oh, your music's rubbish.
My daughter has turned to the dark side and gone to Harry Potter, and that was just pure spite.
Yeah.
So how did The Last Jedi appearance come about?
Oh, well, I think, I can't remember when, but at some point it was just sort of a joke, but I sort of meant it as well, is you obviously bump into each other when you're going around Lucasfilm a little bit, and Ryan was someone that I hadn't seen lots of, but felt like a kinship with, because you instantly, like, I don't think many people know what I'm going through, I think you might.
Yeah.
And there's that, to me, it's that
like
scene.
Like a support group.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's like that scene in the beginning of, it's like the beginning of Platoon, where as he comes off the plane and he looks at that soldier who's leaving, and they just look at each other as they pass, and there's like a million things are spoken without anything being said, which is like, you're fucked, mate.
Yeah.
And it's that, as you walk past each other in the corridor and you're like, all right, you just, that same exchange, it's just like that moment.
Yeah.
And so I think to take, you know, just for a bit of fun, I was like, okay, I'll trade you a cameo.
Yeah.
And so in our film, he's the guy who fires the Death Star. Yeah. So he technically fires the Death Star for the very first time.
Yeah.
He's the guy who kind of pulls the lever pulls the lever, And so, even though he's got a mask on, which is not our fault, that's just the way it was set up. he was like, I'll give you a part. But we were in the thick of finishing the film. It was the summer of just before the release. Mm. So things were absolutely crazy. And it was like the last thing I wanted to do was go to Pinewood and shoot something. Do you know what I mean? Like we were in the edit, and there was thousands of VFX shots that had to be finished.
Where
and stuff.
Were you editing? Because you edited with Colin Goody.
We edited in Soho.
Okay.
So, do you know where they show the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
on the corner.
If you're looking at that and you go left.
Isn't that Haymarket?
I think it is. Think
the Curzon. Do you know the Curzon cinema?
Yeah.
So it was above that.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so we were doing all that, we're in the thick of it, and then they got this email off through my assistant or someone, it was like, okay, it's time for your cameo, and it's on this date, you got to go. So I went and didn't know what was going on, and it was really interesting. It was a really good learning experience because I suddenly realised what the extras feel like on your film.
Yeah.
Because I got there, and obviously they probably briefed everyone, but I got there late.
Yeah.
And they were like, put this on, go here, stand there. Yeah. And I went into this trench. I had no idea what was going on. And I looked to my right, and it's Gary Barlow.
Oh, is that
him? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And I'm like,
we're just looking
he's
at you.
Still my beating heart.
Yeah. He's not the one that says salt.
No.
No. No. No.
So Gary's next to me.
Yeah, yeah, that's to the left. Yeah. 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 Oh, right. We'll have to watch out for that.
And I think his wife or girlfriend was there as well.
Yeah.
And you start looking down the line, going,
"What is this going on?"
Yeah. It was a bit like, I'm a rebel. Get me out of here.
Yeah. 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 Now, when that guy goes, salt, were you tempted to shout out, and plenty of vinegar, please, mate? Because that's what I'd have done.
I do have my jokes about this, but they can't be more.
But it was something completely different.
I don't know whether you've seen it or not on Twitter, but somebody has gone back to Rogue One, and when Jyn Erso's looking through the data files, and she'd hyperspace tracking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know the name of the Twitter user that did it, but it's sort of, you know, lots of people have been questioning, and then Pablo went, yep.
Yeah, and I honestly, like, I can't take any credit for that, and I reckon it's Pablo.
Yeah.
John Schwartz would know the answer. But what happened is, obviously in the screenplay, it's like, and now a list of... And it's like, obviously in the screenplay, it's like, and now a list of gobbledygook.
Yeah.
As she's just saying this. And obviously there's placeholder things that the screenwriter would have written.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, and I would never take too much time dealing with this. Typically John, who was one of the producers on the film, Josh Watts, would be the one that get really into this.
Yeah.
And he would be like, okay, he would go and find what these could be that might tie up with or tie into other films.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Do you know what I mean? No. Like, and so it was just, we ended up hearing those names. So do so many takes.
Yeah, yeah.
Heard those names a million times. Yeah, yeah. And they become like you say, hyperspace tracking, and I just like flinch. Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, oh, where's Felicity? And
Darksaber and
Darksaber from Rebels is in it.
Right. And yeah, exactly. And I don't know who came up with those. They're nothing to do with me.
No.
And I didn't even notice in The Last Jedi, it came and went, and I didn't even think about it.
It was a good spot by whoever found that, because it linked the two straight away.
I never noticed.
And now we're all thinking, well, when Solo comes out in May, we're going to have to really keep our ears open.
Which one's next?
Someone should go through that list, and maybe it's going to... Maybe there's the whole Disney plan in there. I think there was, like, Takeover Fox somewhere.
Well, we've got to say...
Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, there's a question. Well, Secrets of the Empire... The new thing that's down at Westfield.
Okay.
Have you seen it yet?
No.
Because it's Rogue One heavy. K2's in it. Oh, Cassian's in it.
All right.
So you've not seen it.
No,
I want
to. No, yeah. Someone mentioned that at the premiere.
It's brilliant. Wow. Did it last week. It's brilliant.
Okay.
You've got to do it.
What do you do?
You go in. First thing, you walk in a room. There's a video screen, and Cassian does a whole sequence explaining.
And is it
what
him or is it virtual?
Oh, no, it's Diego.
Is it?
Yeah, he came back and did it. Wow. And then you go onto the ship, put your goggles on, you got your body armour on, you go into another room, and it's completely, you're a stormtrooper, so you're looking down at your hands, and you've got the greaves on, and the back of your hands are different colours, so you can identify each other. And then you're basically in an Imperial facility on Mustafar, and you've got to get this crate, and there's this black sabre in the crate, which is why I was thinking maybe it was a link to that whole sequence with, you know, all those bits in the film. But it's brilliant that Tudyk came back and did K2 again.
Okay.
I always wondered if you'd seen it, obviously your connection to the film.
So. Someone said, have you done that the other day? And I was like, done what? I didn't know about it.
Christmas shopping at Westfield.
Yeah, I remember, now it all makes sense, it's all adding up. Yeah,
it's very good, it's very good.
No one's getting anything for Christmas, I'm just going to be stuck in there all Saturday.
We're a bunch of guys go down, because this week we got lucky, with one of our lads found the code, the working title for episode 9.
Production title
for episode 9, Black Diamond, cool. And we've got some KISS fans on the team, so they were pretty happy. Black Diamond.
How did they find that out?
It's on Company's House, so anyone can find it out. Okay. Just we've got a very clever guy. He works with Disney, funny enough. He was an accountant on the last...
Why is it called Black Diamond, though?
Because it's to do with Carbonado, which was the code name for Solo, I think. And, you know, the company's names have got picked way back.
It's for someone else to say, but that's not the reason.
Isn't it?
No.
That's interesting. So we've got some more digging.
So we're going to have to do more digging.
Right, you holding down our ticket. Okay.
We'll carry on. Keep researching.
All right, I'll get Brian onto that. Yeah. Or maybe I'm telling the story wrong, which is more
you're home, obviously, for Christmas. How did coming to the theatre?
I can't remember. I think I got an email out of the blue that was like, hi, it's Abbey Theatre. I wanted to just take them as far as, I was going to say the line from the film then, I can't remember. What does he say? I can take you as far as Anchorhead.
You can get a transport there to Moss Island.
You must do what you feel is right. That's not geek out.
I feel ashamed I did that.
It's all right, between one of us, Paul.
Yeah.
Did you come here when you were a kid then to the
apparently,
theater?
My mum was telling me, because I do remember that room.
Yeah.
And I remember...
it's a great auditorium that that way, it's brilliant.
Well, I didn't say it in there, but... There was a book that I used to read all the time as a kid called The Steven Spielberg Story, and it was all about how he got into filmmaking. And one of the stories was when he made his first film, he hired a cinema and showed it to his friends and paid. And he sort of realised you can make money out making films. He got friends to pay. And I used to picture doing that with this place.
Oh, right.
Like in my mind, I was like, one day if I do what Spielberg did, I will show a film here and people will pay to see it.
Yeah.
And I pictured being 12 doing that. So it took me like another 30 years. So it's kind of weird, but it's just weird to be... I feel like I dreamt it. Do you know what I mean? It's like easy to go, it didn't really happen. It was all a dream. It feels too strange. Like you grow up, you watch Star Wars as a kid. You
play with the toys.
You want to do it. You want to be part of it. And then it happens. You start to think that maybe all that theory about this is actually virtual reality. Like, I picked the version called Star Wars Director.
Yeah.
And it's all that. So I'm going to wake up soon. It's all. I'm going to feel like an idiot.
I'm on that page. I'm on that page.
Absolutely. The other thing is, we've all sponsored you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Sometimes I try to thank people individually, and then sometimes there's names, and I go, I don't know who that is, and I don't know how to contact them, and. Sorry.
Well, it all started because one of our guys, Paul, is who's currently doing.
Oh, he's doing
mental things in LA.
And who was actually doing lighting? He was actually in Rogue One.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. He was a rebel fleet trooper in Rogue One.
But he messaged.
You've met him. You have met him.
He messaged us to say that you were doing
the marathon.
The marathon. Why? I'm just asking, why would you want to run this?
Exactly, yeah.
I know that sounds...
Not that we doubt you or anything.
No, I'm learning that question myself. I ask it a lot.
Coach to 5K.
Have you started training?
Yeah. Well, what happened is I got really out of shape. Like in post-production, you sit on a sofa for a year.
So that's what I've done.
That's more than a year.
And so and then I had this, I've sort of had a year off in a way, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, I'm going to get back in shape. I promised myself I'm going to get in shape. So I started running, but I could only manage like 15 minutes and then I'd die. Yeah. And then slowly that became, I can manage half an hour. I can manage an hour.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know what, I'm going to start another film soon, I hope. And so... that'll be it. And so this is my chance to do a marathon. And so it's very selfish. I was like, this is the last time, so I'll probably get to tick that box. And so I decided to do it. And obviously, I was going to tell my sister at Christmas, because she has four marathon places through her charity.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'd love to run in the London Marathon for a cert.
Yeah.
And she did this announcement on Facebook saying, they've all gone. Thank you to the following four people. Mm. I was like, and I wrote to her and went, are there any other places? She went, no. Can I get anyone? No. And I was like, oh God, I've missed my chance. So I panicked and I looked up, I was in LA and I looked up Los Angeles Marathon and it was in March and you could do it for any charity you wanted. So I picked my sister's charity, obviously.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing it. But it
this March coming?
Yeah, in a few.
So you're going to do the Coventry Half Marathon as you lead up
when
to
is it
then? That's February.
Is
apparently,
it?
Not that I know. My friend's running it, I'm not.
If I'm in Coventry, I would.
You could do it with a stormtrooper.
Yeah. Coventry in February or LA in March.
Actually, the conditions are probably better in Coventry.
I think so, yeah.
So, what's the charity that you sister?
Oh, it's a cert. So, It's basically to raise awareness and help people with supporting kids and that with Angelman syndrome, which is a chromosome deficiency that means that typically they can't speak, learn to talk properly or walk properly either. And so, and my niece has it, my sister's daughter, Ella. So it's obviously close to home. So, and she made me the patron, whatever that means. So I feel like it's about time I got off my
ass.
It means
you're the guy that has to run the marathon.
Yeah. I have to run 26 miles. And everyone says, and even if you run 20, you know, because you think, God, if you can run 20, you're all right.
Yeah, because
right?
Yeah, you'll do the last six on the run line.
But everyone says you run 20 and the last six will kill you.
That's where the wall is.
Yeah, like you can't, it's like you can't be okay at doing it. It's like it's called a marathon for a reason because it's supposed to destroy you.
And thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, no, thank
you. Taking the time and coming to see us.
No, cheers. Thanks
for chatting to us.
It's been brilliant.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
We were fortunate enough not only to get to the press screening of Solo, which was on Leicester Square, which was rather awesome. And we've got some very cool video from that already up on the site of when we came out and we were chatting to Sam Prentice and Oliver Staples and Mark Mulcaster from the Rebel Legion was there and a bunch of Fanta trackers were there. So some nice video on the site already of us talking about that, our initial thoughts. But also we saw it at Pinewood, which, well, it's Pinewood. It's where they make the films. I mean, how cool was that? Had you done that before? I'd been lucky. I'd done it a couple of times. But had you done that before? Was that your first time?
That was my first ever trip to Pinewood Studios, and it was amazing. it really was. I hadn't quite appreciated, because I'd done Elstree with you a few years ago.
That's right, yeah.
And I think I was expecting something sort of similar to that, but like Pinewood felt a lot more Hollywood.
Yeah,
and
that
sounds
yeah.
a little bit cliche, but like I think it's just to do with the development of the building and.
Yeah.
And the surrounding area, but it was so cool. And be able to like share that experience, not just with the other members of the Fanta Tracks team, but there was an expanded family of friends
yeah.
from the Vintage Rebellion guys were there. Also part of that, the Running Stormtrooper Jez was there, but Stephen Savory as well. But Paul Bateman and Grant Criddle. Oh, Rutvig.
Yeah, Rutvig was there, yeah. Mark Hockley was there, wasn't he?
Of course.
Yes.
Robin Williams himself. Vince as well.
Vince
Abbott. That was quite phenomenal.
It was.
But, Mark, did you enjoy the film? What did you make of it?
Oh, I big time enjoyed the film. When we saw it on the previous day at the press screening, and obviously it's a different kind of crowd, isn't it? You know, because these are seasoned sort of movie-going people for the most part. You know, obviously there's general folks get in, but for the most part, those people are there to review it and write their little pieces for the newspapers, magazines and podcasts and whatever they do. So, you know, you're not expecting the crowd to go whooping and hollering and such, but throughout the whole film, because it's an upbeat, put a smile in your face, especially if you're an old school Star Wars fan, I think there's a lot of nods to stuff that we'll have been reading and looking at for years and years and years. It was just a joyous vibe. And that sounds a bit poncy, but I came out of that film grinning my face off. I think we were all buzzing, hyped up by it. I loved it. I thought Alden did a great job. If you look at him, you wouldn't say, well, there's the young Harrison Ford. But you would certainly now, having seen the film, go, that's definitely the young Han Solo. So I think they did a great job of casting him. He works. Eunice gets better and better in that role all the time. And Chewie as a character had so much more to do in this film than any other Star Wars film. It was kind of impressive how much they brought him to the fore. And just you could go through the whole cast and sort of say what a great job they did. Big roles or small roles. I thought Tandy Newton would be in it more, but the role that she had as Val was tight and concise and fit really well into that part of the film. So everybody just nailed it. I just loved it. And the music, I've been playing the music all week, and at first I wasn't so sure about the music because that's such a massive element, obviously, of being a Star Wars
fan. Yeah, no, definitely.
And that's just John Powell's score just gets better and better. And I'll just think of it now as like one of those big sweeping 50s Western-style scores, but it really works for the tone of the film. So I was just really happily blown away by it. What about you?
Well, last episode we were discussing our sort of hopes and fears. I think I was sort of like more or less saying that I was quietly optimistic because it doesn't follow something that you kind of completely invested in to the same degree. And I absolutely loved it. We managed to do the press screening, which was fantastic and really quite exciting to do, even though it was an endurance test as well, because I don't know if they're their aircon had died or something
like
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it was, that was really hot. And I'm glad, to begin with, I went in there, I went large for like popcorn and a Diet Coke.
You did it right. You did it.
No, I was still thinking, well, what did I go all this for? And I was eating, I was next to Paul McHugh, like eating all this popcorn, like trying to give it some, you know, to even Brian, and they weren't having any of it. but by the end of it, I drank that Coke, you know, even though it was like about 10 gallons of it. It was really great from the point of view as a Star Wars fan, and that's not necessarily the average, but it didn't dwell on one particular facet or planet or character too much.
Yeah.
It moved along at a pace that made sense, didn't drag things out too much. Now, you are going to have points where, you know, it slows down and things like that. But to me, the story moved forward. It brought in the characters. It didn't kind of do overkill on new characters to say, oh, hey, look, this is the new thing, and we're going to like sell a million of these toys. And we want to make sure, you know, take like the Porgs, for example. You know, we're going to like just literally ram it down your throat and do all of this and that. It's like, no, just do it. Just get on with it.
Just rolled it out. Yeah.
And there you go. Same with like the vehicles. There was not too much in any one area. There was no kind of like over the top hidden moral messages or anything to like come through or anything like that, to me anyway. There are things that where there's a slight change. So where you visited Kessel wasn't really kind of, and the Pikes wasn't really kind of like harping on that there's the drug element as such.
No, that I think they're quietly retconning that. They're going to quietly retcon that. I'm sure somebody at Lucasfilm will say, well, we never said spice was drugs. It was so heavily alluded. There was no doubt it was drugs. But, you know, I think they're going to quietly dial back from that. I don't think they should, because it's a rough and tumble galaxy, and goodness knows there's plenty of drugs on Earth. So, compare.
But it was done in a way that it didn't say it was, and it didn't say it wasn't, if that makes sense.
Makes sense.
So it kind of like left it to the interpretation of the original fan and to like someone who's new is like, oh, this is how they make hyperspace fuel or whatever. But it was really cool. And there were so many like little widgets and whatnots in there and nods to fans that you can pick up on. It wasn't kind of like in your face like, say, Dr. Avazan and Ponda Bobba, and thank God there was no R2-D2 and 3PO, because that would have really ground my gears if somehow they've got to be in every single film. But any kind of like reference was so fleeting that it could be like blink and you miss it, so you gotta see it maybe more than once, you know, when you're like picking these things up. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really cool. To me, it sets up a whole new ball game now of you can go in a million different directions with this.
Yes.
So that long-term Star Wars, and this won't be a popular feeling, I'm sure. The main Star Wars storyline won't actually be the main Star Wars anymore. Yes. Because you can, those things were universe-changing stories, you know, with the Empire and stuff, but like you got all of these other things, just as the expanded universe did the same. They've now flexed their muscles and dipped into this area that they can take this and just go in a billion different ways, and I think it's really quite cool.
That's a good point. I think one of the things that Lucasfilm are doing now, certainly over the last 2 or 3 years, is that they're really expanding the geography of the galaxy. So when you used to look at the galaxy map, if you looked to where Coruscant was in the centre, if you looked to the left of that, it was the unknown regions and you didn't know what was there. But now they're starting to fill out that part of the galaxy. They're taking ownership of that part of the galaxy, and you're learning that there's other things going on out there, which I like. But I think
I was going to say, you touched on this before, and I was just like, oh my word.
I know, but like you say, we don't need to follow that main through line of Empire versus Rebellion or First Order versus Resistance. We can get down to the smaller stories like Han meeting Chewie or winning the Falcon from Lando or whatever. And I mean, what a awesome scene that was, you know. So there's so many little moments that you can fill gaps in. And of course, George always said, you know, he wanted to keep off the table exactly what we've just seen in last week in Solo, you know, that Han and Chewie meeting. You know, he said he didn't really want to delve into Obi-Wan's past too much. He didn't really want to learn where Yoda came from. He liked the mystery of it, you know. I think certain things will be kept a mystery because certain things you don't need to know, and if that's what Lucas wanted, I think they should respect that. But nevertheless, there's plenty of gaps, and like Rogue One, you didn't know you needed that film till you saw it, and this kind of feels the same. So I could have lived with kind of knowing how Han and Chewie met. Now I've seen it, it's like, I want more of this. They've got to give us more of this.
Definitely. And there's a great range of other characters as well that were new into this. For me, Beckett was probably the coolest character in the whole thing. I know everybody will be putting the spotlight on Han and Lando in terms of this, and no doubt about it, you know, they were good. But I just like the idea of Beckett, and he is a true kind of gun for hire,
yeah,
trying to like look out for himself. And you can see the influence then that may then have brought in those elements to Han.
Totally.
I thought Kira has got a lot open to interpretation as to her motives and what she wants to get out of the universe and things like that. And then also things like Lady Proxima. How gross is that? But like, so cool at the same time. And Enfys Nest, that you got the band there, of which Warwick, is that the first time Warwick's actually had lines?
You know,
English lines.
I think, yeah, I think on it, and it probably is, because, and also he's been part of, I mean, he was part of the tribe in Jedi, part of Watto's entourage in Phantom Menace, which is the same character he played in Solo, it's Weasel.
Did not know that.
Yeah, it's the same character, yeah. So that's kind of cool. He was part of Saw Gerrera's gang as Weefy in Rogue One. So he's kind of always in these little groups and gangs. I'd have to check, and I should know this off the top of my head, but I don't believe he's ever spoken directly to camera sort of like he did in this film. And obviously there's the connection with Ron Howard, which doesn't hurt, does it? But I think going back to Beckett, I think Beckett, we did the little video thing on Leicester Square and you said 3-word review and I said reminds me of Raiders. Not thinking in the moment that it was written by the same guy. It was written by Lawrence Kasdan. But you think back to Last Crusade, which wasn't written by Lawrence Kasdan. You know, the scene where Indy meets the older guy who wears the hat and does the archaeology and kind of gives Indy the style look, you know, the baggy pants and the hat and all that sort of stuff. You can see how Beckett's attitude to life, to the galaxy, is very much like Han's by the time we get to episode 4. So yeah, there's lots of cool little analogies, and it did remind me, it was an action adventure film in the same sense that I like Attack of the Clones, because it's kind of like a mystery thriller. It's very unique. That one particular film stands out as being quite different to all the others, certainly in the prequel trilogy. This is again very different. Rogue One was the Wild Bunch, wasn't it, really? Magnificent Seven kind of vibe, you know, that Dirty Dozen, let's go in and get the job done no matter the cost. And this was, again, this was like a heist film, so it had that kind of Ocean's vibe to it in a weird way. But also, it was a Western. It hit a lot of markers, but I was thrilled to it. And to that point, when we came out of Pinewood, we all stood outside before we all dived into our cars, and I managed to grab a bit of audio from everybody in the piddling rain. So let's quickly go to that. Let's have a little listen to our first initial thoughts as we came out of Pinewood Cinema.
Right, it's madness here. I am at the Solo screening. I'm walking around people. I'm getting people's first impressions. Tell us, first impressions, Jez, of the film.
I loved it as a movie. I'll be back again to watch it again. Is this a spoiler? I look forward to the sequel massively.
Okay, that's not a spoiler. Mark, what do you think of the film?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was huge. I'm going to have to go and see it tomorrow to kind of take in a little bit more of just kind of where they've taken everything. But yeah, amazing. Really enjoyed it. And Alden was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Good point. Athena, you were worried about that, so what did you think?
I was so scared. I'm so excited. Nailed it. Exciting, wonderful movie. It took me places I never thought possible. So relieved. I was genuinely terrified of Alden and just all the characters. And from the trailer, does not do that movie justice. It's way, way better than the trailer gives credit for. I need to go and see it at least another 5 or 6 times in the next few days to get my head around what I've just seen. So happy.
Turning tables, what did you think about it?
I loved it. It was fast and pacey. I said to Grant earlier, I said it reminded me of Raiders.
Yeah, totally.
In the action film with space bang bang.
I loved it better than Rogue One. It's
totally different, but but I think we're all agreed that it's got us putting big silly smiles on our faces.
Yeah. Star Wars smarter back.
I'm gonna move on to other people. Thank you guys. I'm interrupting your conversation. Paul, what did you think of the film?
I think it's the best Star Wars movie since Return of the Jedi. That's how much I liked it.
I like that.
So, and I was in a completely negative, non-receptive mood to it, really.
Yeah.
Being as I didn't like The Last Jedi, but this one is just off the chart. You know.
What was it that worked for you? What was it that made you just smile?
From start to finish, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. So that's all you're saying, you know. And I'm super hypercritical of these movies, really, to the point of being ridiculous. So it's kind of surprising, really, that I say that. So I think it's got to be an amazing movie, because it's very rare that I actually say that 100%.
So big thumbs up.
Yeah.
Every box ticked,
and I mean, this guy is Han Solo, totally. Which is bizarre. How did that happen?
I don't know. I'm going to go and ask more people. But thank you, Paul. I'm moving across now. Who else can I speak to? Here we go.
Okay.
Tell us, what did you think of that film?
Yeah, it was superb. I was just It's hard to sort of contain my excitement, actually. It was bloody excellent.
Happy speechless.
Yeah. I mean, there were moments in that film where I was just grinning ear to ear, and I haven't done that in any film in a long time. Yeah. Not even in Infinity War, actually. So, yeah. That was impressive, man. That was real impressive.
Okay, Robic, now Ruth, this is my wife, is going to now tell us what she thought of the film. Ruth, what did you think of the film?
I thought it was fun, fresh, funky, really, really good. I liked it a little bit more than The Force Awakens and Rogue One, but it was that topped it, yeah. Fun and funky and fresh.
Fun and funky and fresh, that's going on the poster. I'm going to ask a guy in a yellow jacket, come on, what did you think of the film? You can't tell me? Wow, he can't even tell me how much he might not have even seen the film, so who knows, why am I asking random people? Right, we've got to go into the rain, people. Here we go, we're going outside. I'm going to ask Dave next. I'm going to ask Dave and Chloe. Guys, what did you think of the film? Chloe?
Absolutely fabulous. Totally engaging. Best ever.
Yeah?
Yeah. 10 out of 10.
I have to go with what Chloe says, because otherwise I get shot.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. That sounds good. Richard, what did you think of that?
That's brilliant. And you know I'm a man of few words, but brilliant, excellent. Can't wait for a sequel, basically, and no more than that.
No more need saying. Oh, here we go. Look at this. We're having a photo taken.
Sorry, doing that in your ear. That's going to look great when you play it back.
Oh, yeah. Send the camera.
Did you get it?
Down thumb. Running.
We're still all live, so we're going to go along the line. So you're all live. You're live. Everybody's watching.
Star Wars Flowers is awesome.
Two in the morning.
As you do.
Brilliant.
Oh, I didn't even say where we are.
Good grief. I'm still recording, and I haven't asked Grant. Grant, what did you think of the film?
Oh, man, I loved it. Yeah. Let's bring another one on.
You want?
Yeah.
It was all good.
Yeah, I want a sequel, ASAP.
Okay, well, that's good. I'll take that as a good reference.
We're doing group photos.
Martin, what did you think of the film?
I thought it was amazing. And has it got spoilers in it? Are we allowed to talk spoilers?
We're allowed to talk.
I can't believe they showed us the uncut shower scene.
Oh, that was going almost too far.
It was. That answers so many questions.
More pictures.
That's going to look weird in the photo. Get down.
Does this work as a podcast, having a photograph taken?
It does.
Brian, what's waiting for the photograph? What did you think?
I thought it was a very solid film.
Yeah.
On second viewing, is it as good as maybe first impressions? No. But the thing is, it's a fun Star Wars film.
Yes.
And that's what I think the community needed at this point in time. Something slightly less controversial, less challenging, less...
Where's your husband?
And just good old-fashioned Star Wars fun.
Okay, so you it's a tick in the box for you?
Yes.
Awesome. Last person I haven't spoke to yet, Mr. McHugh, what did you think of the film?
Fantastic. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
What worked for you? What was the element?
I thought, like, last night when I watched it for the first time, it was kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
Whereas this time, I was just able to relax and enjoy it. And, yeah, it's really good. So I was in the camp, I hadn't watched any of the trailers, totally dark, like I'd muted so many words on Twitter, like went in with expectations were kind of low, I would like to be honest with you. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
and
loved
it. You
want
to see that cast again? You want to see those guys in those old...
I want to see Donald especially.
Yeah.
Donald nailed it. Alden... fantastic.
Wow, that was the
really
tough one,
I think everybody, like, how do you step into those shoes?
Yeah.
Brilliant job.
Yeah.
And Amelia as well, like Amelia, brilliant.
Where's that
brilliant
going to go?
Brilliant.
Left it wide
fantastic
open, good.
I want to see more of that.
Uniformly, everyone here,
I want to see more of it.
Everybody loved it.
Yeah absolutely.
So well done, Lucas.
All last night.
Crazy. So Matt, last person, what did you think of the film?
I want to go again and again and again, and I need more because I loved it.
What was it about it you liked?
It was Star Wars. It just worked. They got it right. Everything worked. I thought I'd picked up on a couple of things on the first screen and it weren't right, and I missed bits, so I watched the second time and I caught stuff then. So yeah, just give me more. Just pace them out and space them out a bit better. don't need it so soon.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
And promote it properly, because this hasn't been promoted properly.
That's a really good point, because it feels,
and when you're
like,
promoting it, don't start announcing other stuff.
Yeah, like Celebration.
Like Celebration, like the park's opening the day before the film opens in the UK is
like
weird.
Existence. Yeah, it feels like they've cut it off at the knees a little bit, doesn't it?
I kind of feel like the biggest thing they should learn from this is like get a great director in the first place. And I'm not saying the Lord and Miller aren't potentially great, but like Ron Howard, it seems just like
any Lord Miller stuff,
no,
or any
not
Ron Howard
really.
Stuff. No,
but I mean, what I would say is like, without bashing Lord Miller, because I mean, how can you do that? Yeah. But it's clear that what we have here is like entirely good.
Yeah.
Right. So Ron, at least 75% of that was Ron, probably.
Yeah.
So like, why not just get somebody like Ron Howard every time in the future, instead of somebody that's a bit maybe potentially a complication.
But you feel not so much fresh.
Like with Rogue One, they got lucky with the mix of the two directors, and they've got lucky again. You think will they get away with it if they do it a third time?
I don't know if luck's a factor. I mean, it's like obviously they have to work really hard, but
there's luck and there's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's true. Chance, I suppose. Yeah, but
you can throw money at stuff and fix a lot of things.
I just like the fact that I could fall into this movie where, like others.
Yeah,
you can't always fall into them completely.
The
pace
was fantastic. Yeah. It barely let up.
It doesn't stop. I compared it to Raiders because it's that it goes. It's one of
without being one of those like when they say fast paced these days, they go off and mean like Transformers, which is just overwhelming and like just noise. But with this, it felt like old fashioned pacing.
Yeah,
you know, like. I risk of sound like an old geriatric, but it kind of felt like a movie from the 80s in a good way, not like a bad way. So
there were some 80s references in it.
Yeah
the references for the fanboys is rammed.
Oh, this we'll be looking at this
and different eras. You're a big book fan, so you caught book stuff. I play the video games, so I caught stuff from different bits,
like Terrace Cars.
And I'm like, I just want to get the cheap mode for Big Head.
Are you all thinking the same thing or feeling the same way I am, which is I was wondering, like, I thought, if this is really good, am I going to end up kind of like really having a bias towards all the spin-offs that are nothing to do with the trilogy? You know, like right now I kind of feel like, well, the two spin-offs have been the ones that are my favourite. So now
I'm
like,
Han Solo 2 needs Super Bombad Racing in there.
It needs more Banthas, and it needs a lot more fat English fan extras.
Banthas and fat preferably.
We need to know somebody who's done extra work though.
Yeah.
Paul.
Hello.
Hello. No fat ones, Brian.
So this is definitely a success. We're all buzzing. We're all happy. I'm looking at all these happy smiley faces.
I mean, what's nice is like because everybody knows we're sort of like massive Star Wars fans and stuff like that. But now after The Last Jedi, everybody knows that I absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
And I went into this one with a lot of cynicism and came out like really positive, which is really like the best case scenario. Because after Rogue One, I went to that kind of going, we can have problems with this one, and I came out going, that's amazing too. So this for me, this is like
the one that we've only had.
Sarcastic Porg.
Goddamn Porgs.
It was the recharge we needed.
To backtrack on what you were saying about the promotion, I felt that Avengers, like, I think, took a
give it some space to breathe.
Exactly.
Fans are going to say it's not taking loads of money. And as geeks of all my life, running a comic shop for 25 years, we've never had a time where there's this much geek culture coming out week after week, and great quality. It's all great quality. You can't keep topping yourself, but you can stay to the same quality. But we've had 6 movies in 3 months that are for us, that preach to us, and it needs a bit more space. The timing by the studios is ridiculous.
Too close to Avengers. That's for me.
Too close to Avengers.
Too close. Too
Avengers,
close.
Deadpool, this.
Jurassic World, Ready Player One.
Yeah, Ready Player One.
That got so much compared to what Solo received. And I think if Solo had been, as you were saying, even if it was another 2 or 3 weeks, just to give it that
push.
To give it that push.
Yeah. There's no summer blockbusters. They're all spring and early summer.
True. But let's hope that this means Star Wars starts earning money again. Because this one deserves to make a buttload of money, doesn't it?
And I loved all the characters.
Yeah, everybody. There's nobody
all of them.
That fell short.
Yeah.
Not one.
Yeah. No.
Not
Lady
one.
Proxima.
Lady Proxima.
Lady awesome. Proxima.
Yeah. Brian likes the jingle jangly.
Freaky weird.
One of the things I really dug about it was the way they dealt with the Falcon. Not only in terms of L3, which was a cool little nod to what had gone in the past, but also just the physical look of the ship and how she ended up, you know, the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy. What did you think of that, Dave?
It was one of those moments that when you see how they're presenting the Falcon for the film in the form of like pre-release images and stuff like that, you're thinking, oh, okay, so that's what the Millennium Falcon looks brand new. And after you've seen the film, there's certain little things like in A New Hope, when they captured the Falcon on the tractor beam, they said, you know, several escape pods were jettisoned. It now like fills in some of those blanks. 3PO's argument with the Falcon's computer, like, I don't know where your
ship learns to communicate.
Yeah, exactly. And, but like, it kind of all of those kind of like throwaway comments all like fit in.
And again, Empire was written by Lawrence Kasdan, so you can't pull a face at him tying those things together, can you?
Yeah, for me, I know this is like spoilers for anybody who's not seen it yet. If you haven't, go see it. Where they crashed on that planet, you know, refining the coaxium,
yeah.
And they just like looked back, and he's like looking like proud at it, and it's just absolute heap on the dune. And Lando's like, I don't want to ever speak to you ever again. I thought that was great.
I know. Yeah,
it was great how it explained that, and it, like the Maw, which is a great other reference, like Kevin J. Anderson, you know, is like ripping off all like the plates and bits and pieces off the Falcon. That explains how we got that kind of exterior look, and then they modified it from that point onwards to where you meet them in A New Hope. Doesn't really explain the interior, and like how that went from like squeaky clean to like all a bit kind of...
I think when Kira's putting the fire out with Lando's cape, no, that's a custom piece, you know, all that sort of stuff. I think that's kind of their quick hand way of explaining it, because you could see like steam and bulkheads popping and all sorts of stuff. I thought it was a clever,
like living with a Wookiee is what it is,
That's true. You've got to stuff those fur balls somewhere, haven't you? But I just thought it was brilliantly done. I mean, like you say, in Empire, they're still patching the thing together, aren't they? You know, it never got back to being how she should have been, but the engine was always there. And now she's got this amazing Nava computer with all those, you know, those amazing jumps in that L3 can do and calculate for them. Thought they handled it really, really well. And thought that Lando also was part of that Kessel run, that record-breaking Kessel run, which
he'd
never even considered that. That was just, that worked. You could throw shade on it and say, oh, it was a bit cliched, a bit obvious. But like, no, I'd never even thought of that. So I thought all of those elements just worked brilliantly. I was thrilled to bits with it.
It was so much good fun. Really was.
Hi, this is Gareth Edwards, director of the best standalone Star Wars film since Caravan of Courage, called Rogue One. You're listening to Panther Tracks. Enjoy.
Now, one of the other people that we caught up with, it was Empire Day, so Dave Prowse's very last event down near Heathrow. And it was like we talked in the last episode, you know, we went off on a little trail of reminiscence about, you know, the old school conventions and how things were. But one of the guests there, and we've got more to come in later episodes, was Eileen Roberts, who played what would later be called Mosset Binnipede. So she looked like Jabba looked with the half a dozen jowls on each side of her face. How Jabba looked in the old Marvel comic. I mean, you must have good memories of reading those back in the day.
Oh, I coloured mine in. I mean, I never had the comics.
I thought it was just me.
I never had the comics as a kid. I had it as an annual. I remember colouring it in. Here's a really freaky story for you. And because of the way paper felt tip pens.
I know what you're going to say.
You can only like really colour in one half side, of the page. Yeah. But I'll never forget. I never coloured that page in because I just didn't have any kind of sort of like frame of reference of like, you know, what the hell is this Jabba? But like, yeah, he was like this like mousy looking thing with like small eyes and like, you know, kind of hair coming like bold on top and then hair coming out the sides. And he's kind of like, And certainly by that point, I knew who Jabba was.
Yeah.
You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But like, what's going on here? It's not quite right. But here's a crazy side story for you. My grandfather, so on my father's side, was friends with Peter Cushing.
Okay, that's interesting.
I once sat in a cafe in Whitstable colouring my Star Wars annual. Just remember we were in this cafe, and I remember my granddad talking to this chap and mum then going, why don't you show him what you've coloured in? And I kind of looked up and then realised it was Tarkin. that my granddad was talking to.
Wow.
And I just like went totally shy and I just couldn't, and I froze.
I bet you were the happiest 16-year-old kid in that cafe.
Yeah! Ba-boom! Well done. But like literally, I wasn't starstruck. I think I was scared. I couldn't go over. I couldn't kind of like separate the fact. I mean, he didn't even look the same, you know, if that makes sense. But when I realised, you know, that they were just like chatting away, not knowing, you know, the connection or anything like that. But then that whole very same annual that I was colouring in, I had with me. and I could have, you know, now you like think back and you're like, oh, what? But like, I once cried when I met Wurzel Gummidge. There you go. Anybody outside the UK, Google Wurzel Gummidge. And you would have cried as well if you met him.
Yes, if he'd have took his head off, that would have freaked me out as well.
But no, they've even done an action figure of Mossep. It was released from the Black Series about a year or two ago.
Okay.
And am I right in thinking that they're getting a whole backstory that he's Jabba, or she's Jabba's accountant?
Yeah, I think that was the line. It was an accountant or something like that. Now we've got Brian on the team. He's an accountant. It doesn't feel like such a joke, but there you go.
That's what Squidhead was supposed to be, wasn't it? Or
Tessek, yeah. I think it was an accountant. I guess if you've got that kind of money, if you're Dryden Voss or Jabba the Hutt or whoever, Pluvu 2-for-1, you know, you're going to need somebody to make sure your money's all in the right place, aren't you, sir? Makes sense. I wish I had the money to have an accountant to move it around. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Here's Paul Naylor at Empire Day, back end of last year, Dave Frowsey's last event, having a quick chat with Eileen Roberts.
Tell me about your enduring memories of being on Star Wars.
Well, the Star Wars was episode 4, New Hope, and I got the call. I kind of sworn to a form of secrecy, really, that I just got the call from the agent. It was going to be over 6 weeks, and I went along to Elstree Street Studios. It was part of the lot that we used and the actual studio. And went into prosthetics head casting team, and to my absolute shock and horror, I was kind of plastered into this head. And then, you know, we did our scene, the famous cantina. Now, the thing that I remember mostly, there was something mystique, something quite secretive about it. Of course, we weren't to know that it was at all iconic.
But there was
something about it that was certainly very special. And that cantina scene will stick in my mind absolutely forever. Absolutely. But the end of that first day, of the 6 weeks ahead, I started to cry under my head. And Tony Way was very, very kind and said, you know, give her a rest. I split the side of the head, so to speak, and we had times off. And then, you know, I would just do the scenes thinking there was Alec Guinness and Hamill and everyone there. It was just absolutely unbelievable, amazing memories. But still not to know that it was going to turn out as it did. It was an impossible thing to imagine.
There'd only really be Alec Guinness at the time that you would have known.
Exactly. Yeah. But George Lucas and Gary, everyone were as kind as they could be and as helpful, but I was suffering for those 6 weeks.
Quite a claustrophobic mass.
Yeah, we had, I think it's the first time they had introduced continental hours, I think, in the studio. So I know it's very, very popular in the States, it's been going for a long time. So therefore, when we came off and we had our food and drink, for me, personally speaking, it was all liquids.
Yeah.
So I was 40 years younger than you're talking to me now, and I was only 8 stone then. And seriously, I came off of that 6 stone.
Really?
Living with my parents, they were absolutely shocked when I arrived home because I'd stayed at Elstree those 6 weeks. And here am I at this age of 71 doing this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's just magical, really, to meet with friends that I haven't seen. Now, if that was released in 1977, that was 40 years ago, wasn't it? Exactly 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's quite amazing.
Yeah.
to think, here am I talking to you, sitting with friends some I haven't seen for that length of time.
And there's such an interest
Yes, I gather that my whole head, having seen it on the side, on the stage, in a bit of a state where I'd split it to the side or unscrew, or whatever I did to it, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think the mouthpiece was a bit softer and I could pull that apart. That was just hanging around. I'm sure I could have picked that up and said to the prop master, oh, yeah, you know. And
it,
now I gather it's in Paris under lock and key with a private collector.
Yeah.
You know, and... Oh, Mr. Jason Joyner might have it. I might expect. But you know, that's my story, and it's wonderful to be here to tell the tale. Really,
just nice to be able to share Dave's last public appearance.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
Quite an honour, really.
It's an honour, you know, and that's a story.
That's lovely. Well, thank you ever so much.
Thank you.
They had a panel at Galactic Nights talking about Galaxy's Edge, and they've actually announced the name of the village. So I kind of thought, I assumed that the whole thing, not only to us on Earth, but in the galaxy on Batuu, because they're kind of folding that in now, the planet, that was going to be called Galaxy's Edge, which is kind of a cool name. But they've actually decided to call the village the Black Spire Outpost, which I just thought sounded wonderfully 90s. It kind of has that sort of 90s feel about the name of it. Any thoughts on that? I mean, obviously, it's going to be an amazing place to visit.
Well, Black Spire, I mean, that sounds pretty ominous, really. That's going to, like, rival a den of scum and vinily, surely.
Vinily?
It's so hot in here, I need a drink, that's what it is. That gives a vibe off straight away. It's not like it's Endor, sunny.
It's not Broadtree Village.
It's not squeaky clean.
No.
Kind of gives it like an edgy feel to it. What are we going to be getting ourselves into here?
Well, it's neat because L3 mentions when they're leaving, when they're about to go to the Falcon, they're walking across the bridge, and L3 says something along the lines of, you couldn't even find your way to Black Spire Outpost, you know, and when she's knocking Lando about needing her navigational skills. Didn't know what Black Spire Outpost was, and then later on this week we find out it's part of Galaxy's Edge, or the name for Galaxy's Edge. Do you think it's cool that now the focus seems to have shifted a little bit to the underworld? Obviously, Batuu is like an outpost, a bit like Maz's Castle, sort of a waypoint for traders and adventurers.
See, I didn't even pick that up, seeing that in the film. It's only where you've just mentioned that. Could this kind of almost be like, with what you're saying with Maz's Castle, a bit like Tortuga is for Pirates of the Caribbean? You know, that is the meeting place for all of the pirates and the smugglers to go off on their missions and stuff like that.
It'd be cool, wouldn't it? Because, I mean, obviously, Maz's Castle, again, I'm talking about the map now. Maz's Castle is one side of the galaxy, but it's, I think they're saying this is still on the rim, the wild space, that sort of roughhouse area of the galaxy. So there would be various locations dotted around where you'd think the underworld would congregate or just take a breather. You know, Maz's Castle was cool because it was somewhere that was sort of out the way, and you wouldn't get hassled as long as you're stuck to the house rules. This is an entire village, so there's, or a, you know, an outpost. There's more going on here.
And they're fixing this within the sort of First Order era, aren't they?
I believe Batuu is more First Order era, yeah. So even though it's somewhere that they're referring to in the Solo era 30-odd years before, it's still around, clearly. It's not going to get knocked over like Maz's Castle did in Force Awakens. Spoiler alert.
Yeah,
it's good to have another location for our characters to go to, and it'll crop up in stories, I imagine.
That's cool. That's something I didn't actually connect. So that gives it all kind of possibilities and probably like an inclusion in some form or another down the line, maybe even for episode 9 then.
That's true. Yeah, that could easily fold that in because the park will be open by then. So are you making early tentative plans to getting out there?
I don't even know what I'm doing tomorrow, let alone like... I'm my own island, Mark Newbold. You can't tie me down.
This is true. Free-floating island.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to at some point. I'll be honest, I don't have any specific plans to get out there. And that's mainly due to being self-employed.
You are an impresario. You know, you're a one-man...
Yeah, I'm one man.
You're one man.
One man something. But that's really the main constraints. We'll wait and see. How about yourself?
I hope so. I mean, we're hoping, we're sort of saving hard now for next year. So we're not going anywhere big this year. But next year, we're hoping to get over there. But again, it depends. I think they've sort of announced that Anaheim, they're talking about early summer, Easter, early summer, and Orlando sort of late summer, autumn time. So it all depends on logistics. And this year's busy enough. Next year's nuts. Because obviously we've got Chicago in April with Celebration, which is going to be interesting. And lots of stuff to plan for that. And that's not all that's going on next year. So I don't think this train's slowing down anytime soon.
No, definitely not.
It's Tuesday night. Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. Welcome to Making Tracks.
So is there anything else you would like to bring to our attention, Dave, before we sign off for the week?
Well, I would certainly say it was great hearing feedback from the first episode that you produced there, Mark. And like I said, I directly had those conversations there with Stephen, another Stephen, and Matt. So we would certainly welcome any thoughts and feedback from yourselves, as well as like your thoughts on Solo and your reactions to that. Since the first episode, we've had the second podcast launch, haven't we, which is Adam's Down Under, focus on the Star Wars news and events and things like that.
That's right.
But I have nothing to get off my chest other than I just always want to hear back from everybody, you know, because I genuinely interested to hear what people think. I have no vested interest in anything, so I rely on people telling me to then repeat that back to you guys. So
this means you can get back in the line now, Dave.
It just makes my job easier.
Yeah, we all like an easy life. Adam launched the week after we launched Making Tracks. Adam launched Fanta Down Under, which has gone down very, very well. And thank you, everybody, for listening and for tuning in. Also, we're on iTunes. We're looking to expand to get to more outlets as time moves on. So our wonderful webmaster, Brian Cameron's working on that. So hopefully you'll be able to find us in lots more places very soon. We've also got on Google Play and on iTunes, is it the Apple Store, the iTunes Store? I'm not sure which one it is. We've got the app coming soon. So there will be a Fanta Tracks app launching soon, and you'll be able to get all the podcasts directly through the app. So we've got lots of avenues that you can either enjoy us or be irritated by us. We don't mind, as long as you interact with us. We've already had a few reviews on iTunes, 5-star reviews, which was wonderful, so we're doing okay there. We're easy to find. You can find us at Panther Tracks everywhere, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, anywhere you look for us. It's just at Panther Tracks, because we like to talk Star Wars, don't we, Dave?
Always. It's about the only thing we can do, really.
Pretty much. We're useless for anything else.
And even then, it's only kind of like a sort of 50-50 as to if any of it's any good. But
That's true. don't look for incisive comments. Just look for random banter. That's what we do best.
Don't look for anything of any use.
No.
And then you'll never be disappointed.
Exactly. Never trust anyone. Exactly. Beckett was right. Yeah, don't expect anything from us, and what you do get will just be a wonderful surprise.
Exactly.
So thanks again, Dave, for being the co-host. Can I just say now, and I don't think I've even said this to you yet, you are now officially my co-host on Making Tracks.
So it's
you and me all the way, baby.
Oh, God.
Don't cry. You're supposed to be happy.
In that case, please do keep writing in and...
The man having a brain hernia live on a podcast.
Yeah. Well, there's always a lot of that. I mean, I'm always buffering, either because that's just how my brain is wired these days. But no, that's great. Oh, well, thank you very much.
I should let you know, everybody else said no, so I just hoped you'd say yes. So thank you again, Uncle Buck. So anyway, on that wonderfully gruesome note, we shall sign off. We'll see everybody in 2 weeks' time. But until then, keep following us on social media. Keep visiting the site. We appreciate your custom. And that's goodbye from Mark. And I'll let you say goodbye, Dave.
And it's goodbye from Mark as well.
Thank you.
That was terrible. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you in 2 weeks.